So you interviewed quite a few people, or had clips from quite a few people in Cognition Factor. Did you get the chance to speak with them one to one,
Yes.
and how did that work out? That must have taken a lot of time.
That took about a year.
Wow.
I saw in that year Dennis. No, I saw Dennis in 2004. And then in 2006, I got invited to exhibit a short piece on Terence McKenna at the LSD Symposium, which was Dr. Albert Hofmann's 100th birthday party,
Right.
which was a real blast in Switzerland. Loved that. And then I met at the conference Stan Krippner, Alex Gray, Brumbauer, David J. Brown. And a host of, Jonathan Ott, Alex Shulgin and his wife, and all the, everybody was just down the hall. It was a wonderful experience.
Wow, that must have been amazing. So you go through, in the movie, you ask some pretty big questions. And I think that's the thing that draws me to the movie, is a lot of questions that, a lot of other maybe documentaries don't really ask, such as evolution or extinction. Does it have to get worse before it gets better, or can we transcend this dilemma we're in?
Well, I believe that some of the answers that you'll find in Cognition Factor are not so obvious as a more direct approach to say this is what you must believe. And I think this is the difficulty of the movie, is that you basically have to run with the idea that it's all in the present moment and that nobody knows the answers to those questions. I mean, they are fundamentally, we know that there's negativity wired into the system. How much can we take? There were a lot of people on the negative part, and I didn't try and balance it out. And I think what I'm trying to say is that the morality of the movie is that we don't say. We don't. I didn't have. I had so much to process that I didn't. I kind of almost avoided having a view of, will we survive? Won't we survive? I listened to the arguments on both sides, and I put them up as arguments that you could actually take further in your own brain and find out how do I fit into this. And it's
Right.
almost, it's a kind of problem that needs web trance, or as Rupert Sheldrake would call it, more of a morphogenetic attraction to something greater than the I, the me, something like more belonging to the gene swarm before you die. A greater awareness of collective consciousness, as my compatriot here is often more well spoken than I am.
Can you speak a bit about the field that links us all together?
I believe there is a field that links us all together, even in the strangest ways that we couldn't imagine. I mean, there are experiments and there are beliefs, and you have the fundamental, will truth bend to what you believe, or is truth what you believe? So there's a lot of evidence that speaks for the field, as it were. And there's a lot of intuitive evidence that speaks for the field. So I believe in it. I coined it. My own name, everybody's had their own names for it. 100th monkey theory, morphogenesis, whatever you want. But basically,
the idea of web trance is about a collective.
It's
Achieving a collective consciousness through the internet.
Yes. Well, I try not to. Well, the internet. Now, what is the internet? Yes, originally the idea of web transfers crept into a completely different zone. The network is more like it now. We're talking about the internet. It's almost become secondary to your Android phone. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the web trance where you're getting closer and closer to that chip in your brain is what we're actually talking about here. So, yes, your symbiosis, as Michael correctly pointed out here, I'm leaving out the machine intelligence angle, or not necessarily even for the machine to be intelligent, but provide us with a greater capacity, a greater bandwidth, and better compression and better understanding and more common language. You know, that the bits get structured correctly.
It all enables collective action.
Collective action. Well, like Anonymous and Occupy and all these guys are bringing forward, we don't like this.
Like the whole Middle East Spring, you know, that whole movement.
The Arab Spring?
Spring was facilitated by this mode of communications.
Right. Things are just
so that it's all part of the greater awakening of humanity through instant communication, which is, you know, the satellites that could get struck down in a solar storm in 10 minutes, you know, during 2012. So what do you say to that? You know, I might need a lieutenant.
Right.
And my 4x4 in the garage, if it starts, if you can get gas. So, I mean, do you follow the WebBot project at all? Sorry, we're swearing.
It's quite interesting. Yeah. What are your feelings about science and spirituality?
Interesting, because it's basically interesting the way you've got the alchemists against the corporations.
Uh huh.
So, and then I don't know the spiritualists. You know, you've got like it's almost. They've got their heads so far buried into fight, they've, you know.
Science and spirit.
Science.
And spirit. Is there a merger?
Is there a merger? Well,
do you think
I mean,
the internet might be
physics,
that merger?
Well, but spirits, you know, we're talking about generic spirituality as cyber shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, if you're asking me if I'm trying to do it, but whether science as a. You know, culture and maybe I went a bit deep with those thoughts. Yeah, as a paradigm, you know, science as a paradigm and spirit. Well, there's going to have to be something like a democracy in science first, which I don't see right for a while, because science is run like as you saw the movie, it's run like the cardinals in Rome, according to Rupert Sheldrake.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is no democracy in science. So all these funny ideas, as they'll call us, have to be tempered with the fact that until science gets permeated, hopefully by huge doses of psychedelics at the correct age levels. You know, Larry Hagman was a great believer from Dallas. You know, good old J.R. Ewing.
Right, right.
One of his to survive a decent dose of LSD, you know, he found that one of the, you know, one of the trials that any would-be politician would have to go through in front of his whole constituency, which I think is a wonderful idea, actually.
I actually think that might be a decent proposal.
Well, I'm just quoting the greatest. Yeah, I mean, that was some time ago, you know, we're all older, wiser now.
Right.
But
what do you mean by the networked mind meld?
I've experienced this, which was back in the day. You know, you have to really sink to a state of subatomic consciousness before you can start guessing people's socks colors or what their nicknames are.
There's definitely some intuition and something that goes along with this cybernetic
organism. I had frightening experiences like that back in the day. So I'm sure we've all experienced stuff like that, and that could be no different to what Rupert Sheldrake is saying when he says, your dog knows you're coming home half an hour before you do.
Right.
So I don't question the fact that there's something out there, but I'd have to say, take me to your leader in each case.
So is there a metaprogrammer?
The leader.
Who's the leader? Who's the metaprogrammer?
Is our leader the metaprogrammer? Well, if you look at, you know, what is cosmic reality, if you want to like zoom right out like heavy metal in reverse, then you'd have to say, well, it all looks like a big clock, you know, tick-tock, tick-tock, the planets go around, da-da-da-da. Is there a programmer? Well, beyond the time-space continuum, nobody knows what's out there. You only have to ask one question. What was there before there was the Big Bang? And you're in trouble. There's exactly. another quote from Cognition Factor. Tony Farrell, one of the astronomers in the show.
Forgive me, I can't remember who said it, was if we can trace ourselves back to the Big Bang and the actual instance of this happening, what consciousness was there to witness it? So the Big Bang, in essence, must be consciousness. So, I don't know. It was just a...
Yes, no, that's no. They say head. Consciousness, that was actually... are you telling me you saw that in Cognition Factor? I'll tell you who said that.
It was something I read or watched recently, but yeah.
There was a guy called David Peet.
Okay.
Who was one of the guys who wrote to me and said, I've been associated with all these chaps. I heard about your movie. I want to send you an hour tape. So I didn't know who David Peet was. So I said, all right, send me the tape. You know, I'll have a look at it. But when I saw the tape, and I just thought, wow, yeah, right, this guy is really cool, you know. And he was talking about consciousness was there before the Big Bang. And, you know, consciousness has been there from the start. And he was one of the protagonists of consciousness having been there in the movie. If you look at the movie again, you'll see he's one of the guys that, and he's a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd be the first one to admit that it's going to be a long haul before the, you know, the deacons of science drape their cloaks over the shoulders of any of our more enlightened scientists, maybe.
Would you say that you agree with the theory that mind came before matter as opposed to matter manifesting mind? Upper causation as opposed to downward causation?
To quote Terence McKenna here, because you've probably watched all the movies, so you'll understand, I'll try and stay in the moment. I'm an entertainer of mind warp theory and have personally experienced various warps of different kinds, and some of them totally unexplainable and with witnesses.
Right.
But nothing I'd care to brag to, just enough for me to pay attention.
Right.
That
right.
there's something out there that's not quite moving to at my frequency.
Right.
And it's just out of sight. It's like John Lennon said, you know, the moment you try and put your eye on it, it moves away. Maybe that's the way it's meant to be. Which comes back to my live while you're living point from earlier.
Definitely.
So if you're always trying to look at something out of the corner of your eye, you'll never really see anything.
Definitely.
Will you?
Tell me about your involvement with the astronomers at SAAO.
Well, the South African Astronomical Observatories is a kind of... It's a brilliant team of astronomers and people who slave towards the highest ideals of scientific brotherhood and love and, dare I say it, caring. You know, you would battle hard to find a group of more caring people. And don't forget, in Africa here, we're talking about a large group of intelligent people bonded together by a common cause. And I'm not necessarily going to ministerial level here. I'm talking about more of the people who are doing the groundwork, the people who are doing the traveling, the people who are doing the measuring, the people who are staying up all night, the people who are driving backwards and forwards from Cape Town to Sutherland in -4 degrees. I mean, those guys rock, and they're the best.
That's brilliant.
And I'm very proud to have been called in a couple of capers by none other than Dr. Peter Martinez, who, if you get a call from Dr. Martinez, your hands shake and you reach for the coffee. You know, but his first question is usually, is your passport in order? Like, well, your heart's thumping. What's he going to ask me to do now? But the last one was only a rocket launch at 8 o'clock in the morning, which was for a cyber shaman works best at night. So,
yeah.
It was hot. So, we had to drive 250 kilometers at 6 a.m. in the morning to get to the rocket launch, which was about 250 clicks away from here, mm-hmm. at a secret test range up the coast. Get our documents in and get cleared by security and way before we went, you know. And, yes, it was a great day, and they showed the movie at the International Aeronautical Conference here in Cape Town in October last year, and they showed my movie on the big screen of the rocket launch. Okay, it was only a 15-foot rocket. But we made it look like a rocket that looked like a real big Saturn V, nice. By the time, and especially working on it over here, we had like eight cameras or six cameras, including we commissioned. Well, we were on an army base, and they had these cameras that shoot 5,000 frames a second. Check this out. This can fill up your hard drive of any media device you're holding in like a couple of seconds. Finished. You're talking about like 60 gig worth of files in the desert, you know, wherever you know, on the coast. Anyway, we managed to get these army guys to cooperate, and they helped us with the shoot. And we got some brilliant, so slow the footage. 20 minutes for a 1 second or 2 second takeoff, and it was all in a weird. In weird res, all in single TIFFs, you know. It would take them in bursts of, I don't know, 50,000 TIFFs, pushed one shot. Military-grade equipment. So we got to work with that.
Wow, that must have been amazing.
Which was fun.
Yeah.
And we got to be inside those radar vans with a joystick where they point you, someone's about like 5 miles away, and there's this camera on the van. And, like, I don't want to tell you what happens next because they might come and get me. But it was fun.
We don't want to see anything happen to you, man.
No, we don't want to go into the military industrial complex right now. I mean, it's so nice and chill in the middle of the night here.
So the Terrence McKenna Omnibus 2012. What's on the horizons, man?
Well, I've kind of been building up to the fact to tell you that happily, although I kind of know kind of what's on the horizon, it's always a big surprise.
Right.
I've only seen
the first three installments, and they're brilliant. They're amazing. And the footage, I've never seen. I'm McKenna head myself, and I've never seen this footage before, and it's brilliant and really well put together, really well.
Well, the footage is put together in a completely professional environment with, you know, we're basically curing that stuff. I mean, it's all on old, as I said, Betacam Oxide SP.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of work that has to go to bring that up to a high definition and into widescreen format.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of processing specifically. And getting the right colors, getting the color back, and all that type of stuff. It might look like nothing. In some of the places, the footage has been pretty bad, and there's been even more work to bring it even down to a black and white that's visible or nice sepia. But we believe we've tried to fit the movie into itself. You know, in Cognition Factor. We had 99% special effects rate, I think, out of the 100% of the movie. Maybe the titles went in special effects.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find quite the opposite in the Terrence McKenna Omnibus files. We're concentrating more on the content than right. on the visuals. And yes, and the content is basically a set of lectures of Terence going through 2012. Each month will deal with a specific subject. I'm not disclosing all the subjects right now, but obviously 2012 will culminate in December, his stuff about 2012, and we will try and release that. The way it's looking now, we will try and release that earlier in December. And factually, talking about WebTrance and Headspace and all this, we've been looking at trying to, and I'll just throw this open to the audience here, we've been thinking, well, the 21st isn't really a holiday of any kind, and maybe it would be a good WebTrance day, and we should all try and find some way of getting into orbit together. Yeah. On that day, and I hope someone will actually put some kind of a huge scheme together that we could get into some kind of a cyberspace environment that's can do it.
That sounds like a great idea. Let's work on that.
A global party, and those people, we cam the rest.
So, all of you out there, you are invited. Come join us.
That'll be the party of the long night. 26,000 year long count.
Right. So let people know, Terence McKenna 2012, 12 part segments. You have released the third one, am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the fourth one, undisclosed time for release. Hopefully
we're
soon.
Looking, I can give you a scoop and tell you we were going to release it on the 12th because I liked the date. But then I just saw that the 22nd was Earth Day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's some more of April. And I think that's a valid date to release. So we will just work harder to release it later because it's obviously been more work the longer we take to release it.
Brilliant.
So, yes, and we're calling this History Lesson.
Hey, Mike, I want to turn people on to your work, and could you give us your website addresses, any ones you want to give out, maybe some links people can look up on your stuff?
Well, on YouTube, if you want to see it in high definition, you can get it on Mimetico's channel, or you could just, in fact, type in the Terence McKenna Omnibus 2012 on YouTube, and you'll basically get the only page that it's on. But basically, we've launching most of our stuff from the forum on the Cognition Factor page. And the Cognition Factor page is cognitionfactor.net. It's a pretty easy address. And, you know, most of the news comes from a mailing list there, and they're actually the first people, they're the first wave. There's over 20,000 people who are basically subscribed to this mailing list, which is very pleasing. And we've basically been sending out the first release we sent out only to the mailing list. And it was amazing that it actually procreated so quickly that it gave us the kind of motivation is that people need this, and we threw ourselves into it. So we're on edition 4 now. As I said, it's going to be called History Lesson, and there's some stuff on it in about DNA. Generally, Terence continues unpacking his mojo, as we like to call it. In fact, as Dennis McKenna liked to call it. You know, Dennis McKenna has been one of the cornerstones of this in his own quiet, you know, can't get hold of him, but he's always there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Brotherhood of the Screaming Abyss.
It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I think so.
It better be brilliant after all the emails he hasn't replied to, but
exactly.
Never mind.
Exactly, I think I'll forgive you, Dennis. Maybe his fingers have given out from typing, hopefully.
He's probably in a tree in South America, scampering around with monkeys or something. I'm sure he'd rather be there than writing the book.
Right.
But commitments, he's very committed, I can tell you. Dennis is a highly committed energetic and very scary genius. But he thinks I'm scary for some reason or another. I don't know why. We've got our roles crossed.
Right.
Dennis.
Right.
He told people I was scary, which I think is very complimentary, but it's a total role reversal. And I don't know why I've had this effect on him. Maybe it's we've taken an equal amount of psychedelics. But that's all I'll say about that.
Right. Hey, Mike, I don't want to keep you. I know it's late there in Africa. I encourage everyone listening to check out Cognition Factor. It's a brilliant film by my new friend, Mike Kowinski.
And mine, too.
Nice.
Nice.
Let's see. Terrence McKenna, Omnibus, 2012. Check it out. Very cool. And lots of love, man.
Hey, one love. And to all you trans people out there, bring it down to 140 and or at least 120, and maybe I'll even rock up one night.
Cool.
And that's all I'll say about that. But have a ball. It's an Easter weekend here in South Africa. There's people dancing. I hope you are too. Thanks for having me on the show.
Happy Easter.
Good night. Love you all.